still run amok.
Yeah.
So
senses, yeah, senses like a snake charmer. And another example, we had similar analogy we discussed.
Tortoise,
yeah. That's there, but with respect to controlling, there is some, you know, analogy of a chariot. Does anybody remember? The five horses.
Mind is the...
Intelligence is the driver, mind is the reins, and Atma is the passenger. So there also, if the five horses, they go in five different directions, then the soul gets agitated, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like that, similarly, we have to control the senses. That's the importance given here. That's it. So what's the analogy of tortoise here?
It was like you have to withdraw in case you're idle or something. I'm sorry, I'm not in
control. Okay. So what does tortoise do?
But you withdraw when I think you want to control your senses.
So first,
because of the fear, he will control his senses.
This wasn't out of fear. This was when you want to control.
Basically,
it lets out the senses only when it needs to, otherwise
yeah.
it's withdrawn.
Yeah, that's the essence.
Yeah.
That's correct. So another small point is when in your exams mainly, like when we say, you know, describe an analogy, we can describe the terms of the analogy and then terms of what it relates to. Like, you know, tortoise withdraws his limbs whenever it's not needed and exhibits them whenever it's needed. Similarly, a Krishna conscious person uses his senses only in Krishna service whenever it's needed. Otherwise, he idles, yeah, withdraws them. So, these are the two analogies we discussed in verse number 58. Any other points? Yeah, so how does Krishna conscious, there are some practical points there in that purport about how a Krishna conscious person is able to control his senses. What are the practical points there in the purport?
So we have some do's and don'ts.
Yes.
or four don'ts and one do, chanting.
Mm.
And our four don'ts are
the four regulative principles. Yes.
Yes.
So these are so we have to follow both the do's and don'ts. And in the do's, there are other things also, like for example, Ekadashi, fasting on Ekadashi, fasting on festival days. These are all more detailed do's. When we do both of them, then we gradually control our senses. Like for example, right, by fasting on a Janmashtami day. So that one day if we fast, then automatically, you know, senses want to eat so much. But that day if we fast, then automatically basically we are saying senses now withhold. Don't try to, you know, consume. Otherwise always you are dictated by whatever senses wants, right? So that way we gradually we control the senses.
But that should be true for any fasting day, right? Not just
too much.
Are we referring, it's citing an example?
Yeah. That's an example, and mainly, basically, it's like a what to say the whole thing about Krishna consciousness is already given to us. Like, you know, what days we have to fast, what days we should not, or like, you know, what is fasting from, what is Ekadashi fast. Everything is given to us, so we just follow whatever is given. Extra days, if we want, we can fast, but we will not get any additional spiritual benefit. We may tire ourselves, but especially if we follow whatever acharyas are given to us, then we will, basically we are following the footsteps, then we will get benefit. So, and what is the other, another point? About how a Krishna conscious person controls his senses. There is another practical point there. This is actually very. So, how does he use his senses?
For the service.
So that's another practical point. So how a Krishna conscious person controls his senses is by using them only in the service of the Lord. Like for example, initial days when we were trying to practice Krishna consciousness, always these things come, right? Like, oh, should I buy this? Should I not buy this? Is it considered Krishna conscious? Like we always have this question, right? So then one of my senior elder godbrother, he was giving the instruction which a spiritual master given us, which is like, if you are going to use that thing in service of the Lord, you can buy that. Or like, if that is a motive. But otherwise, not needed. So that's the ultimate directive behind everything, Whatever we do, is it really for the service of the Lord? That's so then everything will be controlled. So ours is not restricting, right? That's what is going to come in 59. Krishna says, what is a practical way to control senses is to actually use them, engage them in higher taste. It's not about withdrawing things. It's not about, okay, I'll not do this, I'll not do this. There are some do nots, that's for sure. But more than that, positively engage them in Krishna service. Then automatically senses will be controlled. Like whether
there are a lot of things that you do need for yourself personally. Right? I mean, if I have to pick a piece of cloth, I can just go with something which is very, very reasonable, cheap, or I could have a fine fabric. You may want to clear, I'm not saying it's very, very expensive, but still a better fabric. I cannot justify it as in the service of the Lord.
No, but what is the consciousness behind this? Like, okay, I'm buying this fabric so that I can dress myself reasonably well so that, I can be a good example as a devotee, right? Or it's like, okay, I can dress myself so that, I can show off or, whatever, right?
Even in that range, when I'm not showing up, I have a choice between.
Yes. So that's where our,
How does one decide?
It's a gradual thing again. So it's a gradual path towards simple living and high thinking. So we start where we are and gradually we reduce our extra things we need to live by. Initially we may need so many things, double cot or otherwise we can't even maybe sleep on the floor. Maybe. After some years we may feel, I'd like to sleep on the floor. So it's a gradual thing. Initially, we may feel, I have to really spend 1 hour in the mall to buy one dress. But after some time, we may feel, 1 hour, why am I, I'm getting headache going to the malls. I would rather not go. I would, maybe somewhere else, I just would go quickly and buy something. I would rather use that service, maybe reading Bhagavad Gita, that 1 hour, Bhagavad Gita or chanting or do something else. So again, it's a gradual thing. Again, it's not about restricting, it's about the higher taste. So that's what is going to come in the next verse. Right? So Krishna is saying here, embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects remains. But seizing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. So how he is fixed in consciousness is because he has a higher taste. So the I don't know, did we discuss any examples regarding this? Some higher taste, what does it mean? Or everybody's lost. Mother, yes, correct. So what is it? Can complete?
I was not in
the class. Okay. child is eating mud, right? When we give a laddu, then the taste will change and then you think, okay, mud is not good, let's go for laddu.
Yes. So like that, similarly, what is that? What is analogy?
So similarly, when
for example, today we are drinking tea, something like that, right? So if you go for a higher taste, then you will live.
I think it's about knowledge, right? If you are getting educated, then we will get the higher taste.
Yes.
Otherwise, like a kid, he don't know what is laddu.
Yes.
Unless until he is getting that education, and then he is trying.
So it's knowledge is also one thing. Other thing is about realization also. So higher taste mainly here is about the realization. Like, really I can sense it. Because many times at this level, our knowledge is theoretical. Like, we can't practically apply it. We know, I should not eat food which is not offered to the Lord. But how many times we may go out and eat, right? But higher taste means really, practically, I have tasted it. So I no longer have taste for those things. Like I gave an example of myself, right? Like I like eating sweets, so at office, they keep sometimes, you know, leftover sweets outside. So I just walk by and, you know, I used to get attracted, like, oh, I have to. But after some time, I was like, oh, it's not prasadam, why should I eat? This is a very often asked question. Like, you know, I don't know whether you have asked yourself any time. Like, how do we judge our progress in Krishna consciousness? So often, like, you know, okay, I'm chanting, you know, I'm doing something. Am I advancing? No, we often ask, right? Well, what am I doing? Am I progressing? Like that. So the answer to that is, like, Prabhupada says, it's Pareshanubhuti, means it's self-experience. It's given in this verse, I think. It's not there. Yeah, in some of the purports it's given. Where Prabhupada says that if a hungry man eats food, he knows when he's satisfied. Somebody else, like his wife or somebody else, need not say, okay, you're done, stop it. Right? Like, now I'm more relating this now. Babies, right? They drink milk. I often think, you know, maybe they're not full. No, I have to give more. But somehow they know when they're done, right? Even babies know. So similarly, like Krishna conscious person, he himself is aware, like, you know, okay, I know I'm losing taste for these things. So that's how we know our advancement. Whenever we experience the same situation again, we feel like, you know, I'm no longer interested. Like maybe, you know, now I'm no longer interested to watch movies. Like sitting in a dark room and I don't know what fun it is. We may feel like that. But earlier it's like, you know, let's say the whole day I planned. Whole day I planned, like, okay, this time, you know, I'm going to meet these friends and I'm going to go like this, I'm going to go wear this dress. So much around that, right? So yeah, that's also if we know, we are eager, like, okay, there is some Swamiji coming to temple and he's going to give discourse. We prepare, like, oh, okay, I'm planning everything else, so, you know, I can go and attend. So that's that same propensity is used in Krishna service, because now it's higher taste. So here Prabhupada in the purport mentions that higher taste is actually the beauty of the Supreme Lord. So there is a very nice verse, I don't know the Sanskrit of it. It said that whoever is attached to sense gratification should not go to Yamuna river and see the threefold bended form of Krishna. Once he sees, he will lose his taste for his sense enjoyment. Krishna is so beautiful, like especially in the Yamuna river, like the bank of the Yamuna river, it's standing in the threefold bended form with this flute in his hand. It's so beautiful. Once you go there and just see him, you lose your taste for your sense enjoyment.
What is this threefold bended form?
Three places he bends, right? One is the waist, is the knee, and the leg, ankle.
Are you saying, Mother, he's standing on the Yamuna River?
Bank of the Yamuna River?
I don't know. It's standing there, but what does it mean?
No, basically, it's a description of the situation. Like, Krishna is standing in the bank of the Yamuna River with this threefold bended form, playing his flute. If you go there and see him, it's a description of that scene. Essentially, we have to envision that. Then you will lose your taste for material things. So that's the beauty of Krishna. So have anybody experienced that? Like today, after a long time, I'm taking darshan. So gorgeous, right? It's so beautiful. So have anybody experienced any of the practical, any of you have any practical experiences like that? Sometimes, like, you know, when you go to temples or...
I know Bhagavad Gita is a Indian scripture and it's a good to read, but I don't know what is there in that and how to teach the kids. I don't know anything about that. But I wanted to teach the kids what is Bhagavad Gita and why the scriptures came from India and so
after coming to the temple that day one, there was a Sunday school. I was so happy that, oh wow, now the children, my kids can learn. Though I may not know the full knowledge, but the kids can learn. I can learn from them. I felt like that the first day. It was
goodness, So have you anybody visited any of the temples like in Vrindavan or Mayapur? Like this contemplative temple. So it's an out of the world experience, right?
Yeah.
So very nice.
Tripathi. Many times. Srirangam.
Yeah, temples. Beauty of the Lord. Srirangam especially, you know, the what is the Lord name? Ranganath. Lord Ranganath. Very beautiful. Yeah. That story is also there, right? What is his name? His Ramanujacharya's disciple. Maybe I don't know. Maybe.
Which one?
Oh, I should have recollected that story. Okay, I'll see what I can recollect. It's
one?
About beauty of the Lord actually. The Ramanujacharya's disciple. Any, I don't know. So he. Yeah. So initially I don't know the context, but he was very lusty towards one particular woman, like that. But actually, he's supposed to follow, you know, proper for this thing or something, like Vaishnava tradition. So Ramanujacharya, actually, once what he did is he engaged him in service of Lord Ranganath, and he was so attracted towards the eyes of the girl so much, you know, always like absorbed in that. So once what Ramanujacharya arranged is like he arranged a arati of the Lord in early in the morning or something like that, so that he can see that. When he saw the eyes of the Lord at that moment, that's how he immediately lost the attraction for that girl. So this was a very nice example. I could have recollected the points there better.
Who was
Ramanujacharya? Is one of the Vaishnava Acharyas, like contemporary to Lord Chaitanya. Actually, Lord Chaitanya's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's disciplic line we follow. So Ramanujacharya is Sri Vaishnava basically. Ours is Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, and he is Sri Vaishnava. So they worship Lord Narayana. Yeah. So there are actually four different philosophies, like we'll not go into those details. So in that philosophy, it's like, okay, Lord is supreme, I'm his servant. That's the relationship. Like that. Yeah, so another practical point here, verse number 59, Prabhupada talks about diseased person. What is that about diseased person? What is the analogy there?
Soul has left the body?
No. The analogy of the diseased person.
I don't know about this one, but I heard in one of the lectures, if you have, let's say, any eye problem, then you can see partially. I don't know, it's the same word.
We can read the purport.
Oh, you said diseased person, not this.
Maybe my
past.
Yeah. So what is the analogy of the diseased person?
Which verse?
59.
It's like restricting a diseased person from certain types of eatables.
Diet.
So what happens if we do that?
You get more learning for.
He will neither see. Is it the patient? However, neither. Neither likes such restriction nor loses his taste.
He actually wants more of.
Exactly.
I've seen it practically.
Yeah. So somebody has diabetes, right? Like we say, you should not eat sweets, but they eat sweets only more and more. So that what Prabhupada is telling here is artificial restriction like that is not going to work. Actually, more we contemplate on that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so more we think about enjoying that. But whereas, what is the practical way? Again, so that is, we know it's
engage
not.
Engage your senses in the Lord.
Focus on the Lord.
Yeah. So same thing is engaging the senses in service of the Lord. So taste of Krishna consciousness. So can somebody give some of the your practical examples of, you know, how certain things, you know, you've experienced that you have lost the taste or something over the whatever your course of Krishna consciousness?
Like
so that we can learn and know like how we are all making progress.
I've lost the taste for all TV, Mother.
All TV. Okay.
Yeah.
Not now, but like 2-3 years back.
2-3 years back. Before coming to Krishna Consciousness.
No, after coming.
After coming.
Very, in the very first step, I lost it.
Oh.
Still now, I'm not able to gain.
Okay, very good, very good. Someone? Anybody else?
I think one of the things we did after Krishna Consciousness is Ekadasi fasting. So that gives you a little more
determination.
Determination.
Good, that's good.
I used to listen all of Hindi Bollywood songs, but now bhajans are purport.
Purport or verses recitation.
Yeah.
Recitation. Very nice. So you no longer like hanker to listen?
No.
Wow. What a progress, no? Amazing. Okay, Swami Prabhu.
I'm not going there. He's all done.
No. Anybody else?
Far from me.
No. Shobha Mataji.
There are so many ones.
You can learn something significant. Okay, no, we all know.
The first, the food. We are not eating any outside food. Wherever we go, I will carry and happy to carry. And we eat only the
prasad.
Yeah.
Very nice.
So, anyone, nowhere, like even kids will say, no, we should not eat outside.
So even if you go to friend's house, you will not eat anything from that?
No, we'll offer there.
Okay,
it is before,
okay,
before they eat or something like that. At least one item, if it is fresh, then we'll offer at least one. And then we'll mix in other items. And
it becomes a problem when you have so many other friends that are there, right? So what happens is that whatever you get eaten off, that's all I do. That's what I have tried to do most of the times. God knows how many times I've missed. But I make a conscious effort to at least what's in my plate I offer. That's all I do. That's all I do.
And no tea and coffee,
Mother. Coffee probably was coffee.
A year back I dropped.
Oh. Was it tough?
Huh?
It was, okay. Did you replace it
somewhere? Earlier also, I was drinking very rarely, like once a week or once a month. Then I stopped that even.
So for me, I was born in a non-vegetarian family. So of course, I didn't have like so strong, you know, liking to eat or something. But after I came to US, obviously, you know, it has so much endeavor to make that. And I don't even know how to make, so I never made. But once when we go with friends outside, I used to eat. That's all. But after coming to Krishna Consciousness, anyway, I am associating with devotees. We don't anyway go outside. So, after 1 year or something, somebody asked, did you stop eating non-veg? I was like, oh, I didn't even realize. It's not like, you know, okay, I will not eat. I never had a chance to go and eat afterwards. So that's another point, you know, association effects.
Mataji, I also quit eating meat, but, you know,
There is attraction, but I haven't.
For me, the coffee problem is that I get bad headaches. So because I just used to drink, I still drink at the black, strong black coffee, right? You cannot, there is caffeine addiction actually, so it's not going away that easily. So Sundays, Saturdays, if I don't drink that, I start getting headaches. So
start go
for
tea.
I'll try that.
Yeah, no.
Ginger.
So Mataji, I am still not there, to be honest. I'm only, as of now, I'm really motivated to come to this class.
Okay.
That's the only thing I can
say. For that, sometimes you might have to give up something, right?
Yeah, I have not given up anything like that.
No, Prabhu, for Friday to come to the class.
Absolutely, I'm giving everything.
Yes.
I'm leaving everything, I'm going to this class.
That's good.
No, I used to have Friday parties with friends and now there's no party, like, I'm not coming.
Yeah, see, that's very good. So it doesn't come, no? Anything we do is so significant actually. That's what Krishna sees. We may feel like, you know, oh, I'm not doing anything, you know, this person is doing so much, that person is doing so much. But Krishna doesn't see like that. He sees only the sincerity, you know, where we are, how we are making small efforts to come towards Him. It's like that Lord Rama's story, right? Like in that episode, Squirrel is also helping Lord Ram to cross over the ocean. So then Lord Ram sees that.
So there's an interesting story, right? One of the Alvars, you know, the devotees of Krishna, he wrote a poem saying that, you know, you saved Gajaraja from one crocodile. For us, all five crocodiles are tearing us in different directions. When are you going to come save us? It's like that, right?
Five senses.
So it's like that for us. So you try to suppress one thing, the other thing raises up. So unless you are in constant service, it never comes over.
Correct.
I've noticed that as long as I'm here, I'm okay. Once I step out, then it starts going haywire.
Right. That association helps
Association.
Like if you are going out, if the association is different, they will try to pull you down.
Yes.
Let him leave the temple.
Actually, that's not a bad idea, but you know, some things have to.
The one thing that I can take pride of is, I mean, sometimes it gets very late though, but I don't have my meals unless I've offered my evening prayers every day. Probably that's the only thing I've controlled. I'm however hungry I am, I don't. But as far as controlling tea, or, I mean, I never really drink too much of tea or whatever, but it's kind of moderate. But yeah, I don't refrain from doing anything.
So, but what does Prabhupada practically talk about these restrictions? See, last four lines of the purport. Restrictions are there. For we are still doing 59. We didn't even start today's verse. Restrictions are there for the less intelligent neophytes in spiritual advancement of life. So we may say, right, okay, why we have these restrictions? So that's why. Because we are neophytes. Because we have so much tendency to use our senses in sense gratification. For that, we need these restrictions. But such restrictions are only good until one actually has a taste for Krishna consciousness. So one has a taste, then automatically it's no longer a restriction. It's like you don't want to do it. When one is actually Krishna conscious, he automatically loses his taste for pale things. Yeah, actually, my own personal thing is, when from childhood I used to be addicted to TV. Like whenever even though I was at near my home, I stayed in hostel during my undergrad. But weekends I used to come home, obviously. So whole day, night, everywhere, you know, just sitting in front of the TV. So here also, obviously, until I came to Krishna consciousness, that was the thing. And of course, now when we come here, our engagement is different, right? We don't even know you stop, restrict. It's not like actively I stop. Anyway, I didn't have TV, kind of like that. It goes off. But the challenge was when I go back to India, you know, because all day there it's the addiction, right, to watch TV, and TV is in front of you. Then how, you know, I have, it was so tough just to walk around, you know, just not to watch the movies I used to watch. Initially, it was like that, and actually, recently when my parents visited because of taking care of kids, so we set up TV for my dad in a separate room, so he was watching on his own. I didn't even bother to, you know, go. Sometimes he used to call, you know, this movie is coming, that movie is coming. I was like not so interested.
You've gone back, Mataji, parents?
Yeah.
Oh,
my in-laws are there.
Oh, okay, somebody is helping. Yeah. Oh man, two kids.
Even the same way, like last month we went on a trip for more than 3 weeks, and we stayed in different friends' houses and relatives' houses. So they're all non-vegetarians, but every morning I used to wake up and I used to cook. We had to eat my prasadam.
Oh, very nice.
So everyone I used to cook. So they liked the without onion, garlic. Oh, this tastier it can be. They were surprised. When
that's preaching actually, right? So nice. Yeah, my dad also initially used to complain, okay, no onion, garlic, no taste. After some time, he liked temple prasadam. So evening sometimes he used to get bored with, you know, because no onion, garlic, right? Somehow he didn't like the taste. But evening he used to say, you know, my husband is, if he's coming for service on Sunday, he say, oh, can he get prasadam? He used to say. So some little progress, right? So,
Mataji, what I feel is that this one is. You can, that seed you put in, right, no one knows when it will germinate. When this temple was a little hut, right, I keep telling this to whoever listens. So my friend was there, my wife's friend was there, we came to their house. So my wife used to come, there's a temple there, Krishna temple there, you said, you go. So I never bothered. Even when the temple was constructed, my friend's kid had a birthday here, I'm like, whatever. But then, you know, slowly something you know, Germany, yes, that's him. He's like, okay, go to DYS or something. But, you know, the seed is there, but then it will come sometime later.
Correct.
When it is, it's his devotee, his mercy, the devotee's mercy.
Correct.
So,
that's correct.
Never, you know, when it will open.
Yeah, actually, that's what Prabhupada's disciples once asked Prabhupada, actually, you know, what is our qualification? Like, you know, somehow we came in touch with you and you're training us. You know, this life we can recollect that, you know, we did all kinds of nonsense things. Because, you know, the initial devotees were hippies, right? They're doing all... so, if we recollect, we didn't do any good thing. No, what is our good fortune? Then Prabhupada said, I created your good fortune. So, that's what you're saying, right? Devotees. So, that's what the pure devotees are, those compassionate. So, they travel around to create this mercy for us. So, similarly here, Harilas Prabhu is maintaining this temple. So that, you know, we have these gatherings. We can, you know, be the, and again another temple. So that somehow or the other, people who walk by somehow get attracted. And somehow they can start their journey. Yeah. Everybody has to have certain... Like, we cannot say, no, if I am devotee, then my sister, my father, my mother, they should... No, everybody has their own journey to take. Yeah. Okay, so we'll at least do one verse. Verse number 60. So, 60 to 63 is a section where Krishna is describing how we cannot control our senses. Remember, Arjuna gave initially some reason that he says, you know, I want to go to forest. Right? I want to become a beggar. I want to go to forest. I don't want to fight. So here Krishna is saying that even if you go to forest, senses are so strong, you cannot control them. It's like an analogy is there. That example is there. Like Arjuna has such a Kshatriya spirit. Right? He may say, okay, I'll go to forest. That, you know, I'll not fight this war. Kshatriya spirit means they fight, right? But what will happen there is if somebody attacks somebody, he will fight there. So that spirit is there. So similarly, the senses are so strong, they cannot be controlled, that even if you go to forest, it's going to be difficult. Instead, Krishna is saying, you use your senses in my service. That means you fight this war. So let's see what his, Krishna says here. Okay, that 60. The senses are so strong and impetuous, O Arjuna, that they forcibly carry away the mind even of a man of discrimination who is endeavoring to control them. So here Krishna is saying that senses are so strong that they can control the mind even if the man has determination to control them. So does anybody know the hierarchy, the senses, how the whole thing, what's the hierarchy? How it's supposed to be and how usually it happens. Actually, we'll go refer to that verse. Verse number 42 in third chapter, 3.42. Krishna describes the hierarchy.
Chapter number?
3.42.
178. So Krishna here is saying that the working senses are superior to dull matter. Mind is higher than the senses. Intelligence is still higher than the mind.
178.
And he, the soul, is even higher than the intelligence. So if you have to write a chart, right? So first is dull matter. Dull matter is sense objects, basically. You know, like laddus or food or house or building, whatever. Sense objects. Above that are senses. Above that are
mind.
Above that is mind. Above mind is intelligence. Above intelligence is the soul. So this is the actual, like, you know, it's supposed to be like this, in the sense that soul should dictate the intelligence, should control the mind, to control the mind, to control the senses. Right? Soul means, like, I have a desire. So I will say, you know, okay, I will not eat this. Then automatically my intelligence will say, okay, I will follow. And mind should say, okay, I am not going to distract you. Senses should say, okay, I am not going to eat. Right? This is how it should happen. But what usually happens?
Senses reverse.
So senses control the mind. Senses also control the soul. Right? So one sense, I have a taste for eating sweets or something. Then immediately when I see sweets, that's all. That sense of eating thing controls the whole desire to, you know, eat only prasadam or so many other things. So that's what here Krishna is saying, that these senses, if they are so strong actually, that they can even carry away the mind. They can control the mind. So let's read the purport.
There are many learned sages, philosophers and transcendentalists who try to conquer the senses. But in spite of their endeavors, even the greatest of them sometimes fall victim to material sense enjoyment due to agitated mind. Even Vishwamitra, the great sage and perfect yogi, was misled by Menaka into sex enjoyment. Although the yogi was endeavoring for sense control with severe types of penance and yoga practice. And, of course, there are so many similar instances in the history of the world. Therefore, it is very difficult to control the mind and senses without being fully Krishna conscious. Without engaging the mind in Krishna, one cannot cease such material engagements.
Okay, we'll pause there. So what are some of the points Prabhupada is discussing here?
He's talking about how historically, how there are like strong personalities who couldn't control their minds.
So what is the process they follow to control their senses?
Yoga.
So they themselves try to control. You are following a yoga process with their own strength. So what's the result?
Fall.
What happened? They fell down, right? So there were some incidents where they couldn't control their senses. Like for example, the Prabhupada is telling, Menaka was able to make Vishwamitra stop.
Krishna was and Vishwamitra were in different periods of time. So Krishna hadn't arrived. How could Vishwamitra be having Krishna consciousness?
It need not be Krishna conscious. It can be God conscious also, right? Like, and it's not like, you know. What I'm saying is, Lord is eternal, right? It's not like after He's appearing, then only He's present.
Krishna did the same Bhagavad Gita to Sun
yes,
God, right?
Yes, Sun God Vivashwan. So He's always born, but at the same time He's always there.
So Vishwamitra would have known about Krishna, even though Krishna has.
He knows about the teachings, right? So even if you see what they say about Bhagavad Gita, it's the essence of all Vedanta, something like that, right? So, wasn't the purport in the introduction, it says that all the Vedas are cows and Krishna is the milkman that gives the... So, the knowledge existed that bhakti is the only way.
So, Vishwamitra before? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, even the Vedas are time immemorial, right? So, that this knowledge already existed, right?
No, I'm saying Vishwamitra and Krishna.
They're not contemporary. Vishwamitra was way ahead.
Rama.
Even before Rama, right?
Even before Rama.
Yeah, but it can be God conscious, right? Like, you know, Vishnu. Worship of Vishnu, all these things, right? They could do, engage in.
It's not like God is
Then only is there after that, he's not. Before Christ, it's not like that, right? So, So did we discuss this analogy of cat carrying kittens and. monkey carrying the babies. So what is that? Can somebody explain? How is it related to this theme?
So in the path of devotion, it's when you surrender to the Lord, it's His responsibility to safely carry us across the samsara sagara.
So that is?
That's the cat, it's akin to a cat carrying its kitten. When, even though it might appear it's actually biting, it's actually safe. And the kitten actually feels safer. Whereas the other one is the monkey, where you are responsible, the monkey's child.
Is holding.
The baby monkey is in charge of holding on to the
mother
as it jumps from tree to tree. And once it let go, there might be a problem.
Okay.
So that's
very good.
Similarly, we need to hold on to the Lord through bhakti, and He make Him, you know, be responsible for our journey across.
That's the first one again. For the second one, so if we try to do yoga practice or something,
eventually, though, we are not even as strong as the monkey cub, and we just probably let go, and this fall will be much more harder. Then the monkeys fall from the tree.
So the analogy here is like, so if we do yoga practice or something where we are based on our own strength, like the small baby monkey, then there's a risk of falling down.
Yes.
But whereas, like a kitten, if we rely on serving Krishna, He takes the responsibility to protect us.
Less effort.
So similarly,
so,
what?
Because
there actually it's not just doing that, but it's the whole theme about that I'm depending on the Lord. It's not about it's my journey. It's about my journey in relation to the Lord. So Lord is reciprocating with me. It's not me alone here. We may not see that initially.
But like, in the other case, how am I practicing yoga without this thought in my mind?
Yeah, there are many things like, you know, yama, niyama, that's what Prabhupada has told in 59 verse, right? This is Ashtanga Yoga process.
Mm-hmm.
In Ashtanga Yoga process, there are rules, regulations and asanas you have to follow, pranayama. The whole process is given. Where you just try to, you know, follow, do some asanas and try to
breathe. The Lord is not in the center of
us. Yes, exactly. You just try to use your senses to all this breathing, inhalation, exhalation, try to restrict from eating certain things. You just do where it's not centered around Krishna. So then it's not going to be practical. At some point or the other, we will be given to the temptations. Like how Vishwamitra gave it.
So what was the objective of these yoga practices? These severe ones? What was the end goal?
Actually, in any case, yoga is supposed to connect with the Lord. Yoga means actually connection with the Supreme Lord. But what Prabhupada says is that, you know, this is very, very impractical. Or rather, you say it's very difficult to follow in this age. Like, you know, if we have to know the details of what are asanas we have to do, what are things we have to do, which is not centered in Krishna, it's very difficult on our own to do it.
So, ladder and elevator.
Exactly. Yes, you can say that.
Yeah, we did
the ladder process and elevator. Bhakti yoga is elevator process.
Correct. No, but I was trying to think of, they are all still centered around ultimately meeting.
Yeah,
the
ultimately
Lord,
yes.
More complex ones.
More complex, more difficult. Actually, later on, 12th chapter, 13th chapter, this is what Arjuna's question to Krishna. It's like, you know, impersonal worship versus personal worship. Like, can you tell which is better? Krishna clearly tells there, you know, service to me is much better than impersonal worship. So we will not have any more doubt about, you know, should we follow this versus that. Very clear. Krishna himself clarifies that. And he tells very clearly, this other path is so difficult to follow. You will not be able to do.
But in that case, Vishwamitra was doing some yoga, right?
Yeah.
To reach God.
So at that time only Vishnu, Mahesh and Brahma, right? So either one of them he was praying, right?
I don't know what he was, at least what we know from here is that he's a yogi, may not be God-centered. That's the conclusion I could get from the example here. It may not be, you know, serving the Lord kind of thing. It's just like the other process of, you know, restricting kind of thing on your own endeavor.
Probably there were some
but that's not the story all about, because the story says that because that was the reason that Indra sent Menka to
break his
penance. Exactly right,
so his penance,
there was some reason he was doing or he was praying to the God so that God will give him some boons and he can control the whole earth or the heaven or something like that.
Okay, let's take a step back. Vishwamitra, when he saw Vasishtha's power with just his staff, right, was much greater than all his strength, physical strength. So he went back to get that strength, right? So he was praying to Brahma only.
Brahma, at least one God.
Right. Yeah. But the problem is his strength of penance was so great that our fellow Indra is like, just like, to be funny, I would say that he's like one of our politicians who's constantly worried about his position. And it's like, okay, this fellow is doing so much penance that he will get my position. So he goes and tries to disturb it on his own first.
But the underlying theme is this was done to gain strength and some power.
Correct. He did that. That was his, Vishwamitra was doing it to gain. His intent was to get more power than Vasishtha.
Yes, not for service of the Lord.
As he gained more and more insight, he realized that that also is useless. Even though Vasishtha himself came and said, you are a Brahma Rishi, said, now it doesn't matter. So it's like that.
So probably the hard penance was a way to get all of these special powers.
That's a side effect actually. Side effect. But sometimes, you know, people can, can go in that direction, lose their sense. No, actually this yoga is supposed to, you know, realize the Paramatma within. That's the goal ultimately, super soul. But because the side effect get mystic powers, people get that and get attracted and completely get directed, diverted. That's why, you know, that's why Krishna consciousness is even more better in that sense. Bhakti yoga is even more better.
A practical example as given by Sri Yamunacharya, a great saint and devotee who says, Yad avadhi mama cheta Krishna padavin. Father Arvinda, Nava Nava Rasa, Dhyamani, Udayatam, Rantam Asit, Tat Avadhi, Bata Nari Sangame, Smarayamane, Bhavati Mukha, Vikara, Sustu Nivishta Varnamcha. Since my mind has been engaged in the service of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, and I have been enjoying an ever new transcendental humor, whenever I think of sex life with a woman, my face at once turns from it and I spit at the thought. Krishna consciousness is such a transcendentally nice thing that automatically material enjoyment becomes distasteful. It is as if a hungry man had satisfied his hunger by sufficient quantity of nutritious eatables. Maharaja Ambarish also conquered a great yogi, Durvasa Muni, simply because his mind was engaged in Krishna consciousness.
So this is what we were telling, right? The example of hungry person satisfied with sufficient quantity of nutrition. So he's experiencing himself that he is nourished. So similarly, automatically Krishna conscious person loses taste for material things. So there Prabhupada is giving an analogy, a verse by Yamunacharya where he says that, you know, I'm losing taste for sex. Sex life is considered the most strongest impetus which is driving this whole world, but even that strongest desire I don't have anymore because I am enjoying, I am engaged in service of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. So Maharaj Ambarish story incident is Prabhupada relating to this here, and that will be continued in the next verse as well. So who recollects the incident between Durvasa Muni and Maharaj Ambarish? Does anybody know?
Yeah.
Swamis are sold out.
Anybody else know? Swamiji, no? Don't know? Mother, you may know, right? Okay.
We did have someone explain that in the class.
Yeah.
Okay, so we can.
So Maharaj, I can recall. Ambarish Maharaj is a great devotee of Lord Krishna. So Narayana actually. So Durvasa Muni comes one day and he's about to have his meal. Durvasa Muni says, "Wait, you know, I'm hungry. Feed me first." So Ambarish Maharaj says, "Okay." But Durvasa Muni says, "Wait a minute. I need to go and take bath and come back." So Durvasa Muni goes to take bath and he is taking his own time, he's not coming back. So Ambarish Maharaj, he just takes some water in the...
He has to break his fast,
so he takes some water. So Durvasa Muni comes back and he gets angry, like, how can you actually go do this? And he starts to, before he can actually do anything, Narayana sends his Sudarshan Chakra to chase him. So
yeah, he actually, Durvasa Muni lets a fiery demon on
okay.
Ambarish Maharaj.
So they're there. Yeah,
then Ambarish Maharaj, what does he, how does he react?
He just says Narayana, Narayana, and I think he doesn't
react. Doesn't even move.
Like he's just there. He's peaceful. And then Vishnu sees that and he sends his Sudarshan Chakra to chase. He first kills the demon, then chases the Durvasa Muni, and Durvasa Muni keeps running from. He goes from one place to another place. He goes to Brahma, so that kind of thing. Then he goes to every single place, and then he goes to Vishnu. Vishnu says, I can't do anything, you have to go and ask for forgiveness. And only then the chakra will actually go and go. So comes back to Ambarish Maharaj and then he says, forgive me. And the chakra retracts.
Yes. So what is, how is it related to this topic here?
So even the great yogi,
Durvasa
Muni is a great yogi, is secondary when a bhakta takes over. There's nothing you can do.
There's a lot of final details, but
it's Ekadasi Vrata, and Dwadasi are supposed to break your fast from morning till the next day morning. You're not supposed to eat anything, and you're supposed to break your fast with the charanamrita, right? And then only start eating some specified food, some spinach or something, if I can remember correctly. So since Durvasa Muni has gone, he has to break his fast. Now he is in a quandary. He has to also do his atithi upachara, and also he has to break his fast. He said, so I'll just take the charanamrita and wait for the main course. This fellow doesn't want to give him, so he gets what he deserves.
So the main thing is Durvasa Muni was controlled by his anger, but whereas Ambarish Maharaj, because he's completely surrendered to the Lord, he was not agitated or disturbed. So same as monkey and the cat thing. Same thing again. So that's what Prabhupada is telling. Ambarish Maharaj also conquered a great yogi. Ambarish Maharaj being a great devotee, he conquered a great yogi simply because his mind was engaged in Krishna consciousness. Right? So he is completely dependent on the Lord. So some another example of this, can anybody recollect? Like in, from very, very strong, you know, this Prahlada Maharaj, right? Same thing, right? You know, his own father is the greatest demon, right? When one of the verses Prahlada says to his father, right? You, oh, best of the demons. That's what he relates his father, addresses him as. So, that most ferocious person, everybody, all the sages, everybody used to get scared of Hiranyakashipu. That person is his own father and he tortured him like anything, right? Like, you know, but how did Prahlada Maharaj react? He was never disturbed, right? He was never disturbed. He threw him from the hill, he was, you know, under the elephants, in the fire, eating poison, so many things. And always, the main thing for us is like he never lost faith in the Lord. See, for us, that's the main thing, you know. Small thing happens, we think, oh, is really Krishna, you know, listening to my chanting, what's happening, like that, right? But, you know, it's not like, you know, we may think, you know, okay, this incident passes, then why one after the other is happening? That's what sometimes we think, right? Okay, this went away, again this is coming. But Prahlada Maharaj, imagine, every day some new thing he has to go through. He never thought like, you know, oh, he's really God there. Such an example, and that's 5-year-old boy, such a devotee. Actually, Prabhupada spent most of his lectures on lecturing on 7th canto, Prahlad Maharaj's story. It's his favorite. Okay. So, any more points or comments here? Verse number 16. Any questions? Okay, then we can continue with the next verse, 61. One who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control and fixes his consciousness upon me, is known as a man of steady intelligence. So here Krishna is describing Sthita Prajna, right? Tasya Prajna. Matpara. Matpara is the person who is engaged in relationship with me. So here Krishna is telling, one who fixes his consciousness upon him is known as a man of steady intelligence. So he is telling practically how we can do it. How can one restrict, control his senses practically is by engaging in Krishna service. We can read the Bhagavad.
That the highest conception of yoga, perfection, is Krishna consciousness is clearly explained in this verse.
So one second. So Yudhivya Mataji, you were saying, right? Yoga, what's the goal of yoga, right? So here Prabhupada is telling the goal of yoga is to essentially realize Krishna. Perfection of all yoga is actually Krishna consciousness. So if you are already following Krishna consciousness, it's the perfect yoga practice.
Then why this yoga came into the picture? Means why this long path is existing?
So different people have different levels, ladders, right? Different attractions actually. Not many people may be attracted to, you know, the personalist philosophy. Right?
My question is coming, as you said, the end goal of yoga is Krishna consciousness, and bhakti is also the end goal is Krishna consciousness. That's the reason the question is coming.
Because there are and the other side effects also, so people want to latch on to that. Ultimate goal is actually to reach Krishna only. But then, you know, you'll get mystic powers like, you know, Vishwamitra, how he wanted to gain those things. So you want to hold on to them. Even actually in devotional service, you get side effects. Side effects means actually gradually you'll get auspiciousness and all those things. You may get power, all these things you may get. You may get attracted to that and just remain there. You'll lose the ultimate goal. So we may say, oh, I'm following Krishna conscious. But we may lose the ultimate goal of being Krishna conscious.
Because we are getting attracted to those little powers.
Exactly, and just stay there, remain there. So similarly, the ultimate goal of any yoga practice is to realize Paramatma, Krishna, Vishnu. But then I may stop at attaining level.
Shall I continue?
Yep.
And unless one is Krishna conscious, it is not at all possible to control the senses. As cited above, the great sage Durvasa Muni picked a quarrel with Maharaj Ambarisha, and Durvasa Muni unnecessarily became angry out of pride and therefore could not check his senses. On the other hand, the king, although not as powerful a yogi as the sage, but a devotee of the Lord, silently tolerated all the sage's injustice and thereby emerged victorious. the king was able to control his senses because of the following qualifications as mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. It's hard for me to read.
Yeah, you can read English. King Amrish.
King Amrisha fixed his mind on the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, engaged his words in describing the abode of Lord of the Lord, his hands in cleansing the temple of the Lord, his ears in hearing the pastimes of the Lord, his eyes in seeing the form of the Lord, his body is in touching the body of the devotee, his nostrils in smelling the flavor of the flowers offered to the lotus feet of the Lord, his tongue is in tasting the tulsi leaves offered to him, his legs in traveling to the holy place where his temple is situated, his head in offering obeisances unto the Lord, and his desires in fulfilling the desires of the Lord. And all these qualifications made him fit to become a matpara
devotee
of the Lord.
Okay, can stop here for a little bit. So here practically we can see how we can engage all the senses in service of the Lord. So let's do a quiz. How can one use one's mind?
Thinking
about the Lord. Legs?
Walking
to the Lord. But desires?
To fulfill
Lord's desires. And yeah, others are easy. Yeah, so Krishna's desires, we can at least right now, you know, we have purports and all, we can know little bit from Bhagavad Gita what literally his statements are. Other than that, gradually when we have a spiritual master, it's considered a representative of the Lord. So if we just try to fulfill the desire of spiritual master or masters, we have Diksha Guru, Shiksha Guru, then we know we are actually fulfilling Krishna's desires. So they give practical steps as to, like, you know, how we should mold our life in service of the Lord. For somebody it may be, you know, stay home, take care of children, and somebody it may be go outside and work, somebody it may be something else. That's a spiritual master based on nature, they will guide us. Of course, in general we know the desires of the Lord is that he wants us to be Krishna conscious, and as many people as possible to be Krishna conscious. So that's the most auspicious thing for the whole world. So as much as we try to be Krishna conscious, that's pleasing to the Lord.
But end goal.
Somebody may say, you know, like it's actually, you know, he's Krishna. Is it for Lord's gratification? No, it's right. It's like, you know, why, you know, what does he get out of it kind of thing. No, but Prabhupada many times says, he doesn't get anything. he's already Atma Rama, self-satisfied. It's for us.
Us too.
For us, you know, we get something. We get our connection back.
But the later stage of the Krishna consciousness is, we will start loving God, right?
Yes.
That would be the ultimate desire. Right?
That is the goal. Goal is to love Krishna. Yes.
These are like just a stage.
Yes. Now we do because, you know, I want to be peaceful. Somebody was saying, right? This gives me peace, so I want to follow Krishna consciousness. It's still, you know, my own selfish. No, for my peace I'm doing. So once I find peace somewhere else, I'll stop this. Right? Then I'm not really. No, I don't have that, you know, that attraction for Krishna. Or, you know, attraction to serve Krishna. Desire to serve Krishna. But gradually, that's what happens. Who knows what Krishna says about four kinds of people who can come to him? Krishna says four kinds of people who come to him, pious people, which are one is in difficulty, distress,
seeking intelligence,
other one is material wealth.
The desire. One is the desire to go to the Lord.
One is wise, desire of wealth, distressed, and the knowledge. Four kinds of people. Seventh chapter, I think. I lost my touch with so many things. Yeah, actually there later on Krishna clarifies the wise is more selfless. Where he just wants to serve the Lord. And Krishna says, you know, that person I like more. Because he is more selfless.
Person who is seeking knowledge is just
for slightly
maybe
aware. Chaturvidha bhajante maam. Okay, I know the verse. Here it is. 7.16. 7th chapter, verse number 16. Chaturvidha bhajante maam. Janasu
krishna
ato jignasur arthati jnanicha vartarishubha. O best among the Bharatas, four kinds of pious men begin to render devotional service unto me. The distressed, the desirer of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who is searching for knowledge of the absolute. And then later Krishna says that of these, the one who is in full knowledge and who is always engaged in pure devotional service is the best. For I am very dear to him and he is very dear to me. So inquisitive is like, you know, it's just trying to curious. But whereas one who is searching for knowledge means it's like searching really for, you know, we have this example. Have you ever come across this journey home book by Radhanath Maharaj, right? He's really searching for God. So that person, Krishna says, you know, I like that person more. I'm very dear to him and he is very dear to me.
So the desirer of wealth, you won't really expect.
Desirer of wealth?
Yeah. Why would you expect them to go to the Lord? Because they'd be so busy, right? You think they'd be more distracted than anything else.
No, oh, but that's the common reason they come, right? Like, you come and give 1 paisa, but you ask, you know, I applied for this job, give me job, right? So
that's
what they want. So why we were discussing this is, what was the connection?
The desire of the Lord. We started with desire of the Lord and then we...
Yeah, so the point was like,
what is it?
We may come with these four, mainly we come with distress actually, most of us. But what happens is, after some time when we come to Krishna consciousness, the distress will go away automatically. So then if that was itself our goal, we may actually leave Krishna consciousness. But we have to gradually come to the point where we develop that attraction to the Lord. Then we'll remain. Then we remain only because we want to serve the Lord. Then that's what keeps us going on, despite the difficulties we face. Because I like the Lord, I want to serve the Lord, I will remain whatever it is. It's no more like I will do this because of this. I'll do this because that's what I want to do.
No more if then else.
Yeah. Okay. So this very nice Sanskrit point term, matpara. If you read the word-to-word translation, in the second line, matpara is in relationship with me. Mat means mine and para is in relationship. So he becomes, so if you read how Ambarish Maharaj, everything is connected to the Lord. Essentially it's God-centered or Krishna-centered life. So then he becomes a matpara devotee. The devotee in relationship with Krishna. So we'll read the second section of the purport.
The word matpara is most significant in this connection. How one can become matpara is described in the life of Maharaj Ambarish. And Srila Baladev
Vidyabhushana,
a great scholar and acharya in the line of matpara, remarks, madbhakti
prabhavana
Parabhavena
Sarvendriya
Vijaya Purvika Savdhama
Swatma Drishti Sulabheti Bhava.
The senses can be completely controlled only by the strength of devotional service to Krishna. Also, the example of fire is sometimes given. As a blazing fire burns everything within a room, Lord Vishnu, situated in the heart of the yogi, burns up all kinds of impurities. The Yoga Sutra also prescribes meditation on Vishnu and not meditation on the void. The so-called yogis who meditate on something other than the Vishnu form simply waste their time in a vain search. After some
Phantasmagoria.
Phantasmagoria. we have to be Krishna conscious, devoted to the personality of Godhead. This is the aim of the real yoga.
So here Prabhupada is describing a verse by quoted by a quotation of Vidya Bhushana, that your senses can be controlled only when with the strength of devotion service. And what's the analogy of the fire?
Senses everything. Senses everything. All the impurities from
the community. So Lord within the heart. Which verse is that in the Bhagavad Gita? Where Krishna says, I'm in the heart of him. I give the knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness. I should only give one. Vedishya sarve ameva vidya. Vedanta vidya. Sarvasya chaham hriti sannivishto. Yeah, that's the verse. So 15:15. I am seated in Sarvasya Chaham Hridi Sannivishto Matha Smritir Jnanam Apohanam Cha Vedaischa Sarvai Ahameva Vedyo Vedanta Krid Vedavi Deva Chaham. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas, I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of the Vedanta. I am the knower of the Vedas. So here, it's two points are very clear. Like Krishna is situated within the heart, and from him comes, which is Paramatma. From him comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. And also the goal of the Vedas, all this Vedic knowledge, the goal is to know Krishna. So these are the two points here. Also, Prabhupada is telling, right? The goal of all yoga practice is to actually come to Krishna. Krishna, become Krishna conscious. And Vishnu removes the impurities. Tesham Satadevtanam. That there is another verse where Krishna says that he cleanses the Tesham Satadevtanam Imanopi Kyarasthi. Verse number 10:10. So 10:10, Krishna says, Tesham Satati Yuktanam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Enamam Upayantite. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Right? So Krishna gives understanding. So we don't know, right? As Divya Mataji was telling, you know, what is Krishna's desire? So here, as we are devoted to serving him, based on whatever knowledge we get, Krishna gives further knowledge how we can dedicate ourselves to him. That's what I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Understanding means not just theoretical understanding, it's also, you know, the whole arrangement such that we can come closer to. Like, okay, I'm somehow remembering. So, initially, when I was trying to come to Krishna consciousness, I still have obviously had other friends. So, I was like, you know, slowly coming. But then I had strong, like, you know, maybe 1-2 hours I would come here, but otherwise, I spent time with them. So, you know, at that time, I was not even married at that time. So, you know, weekends, long weekends, you go outside, all those things, right? So, once I went and, like, something strange happened that, you know, I had to let go of the friendship. And, of course, I was trying to maintain my chanting. So, I used to get up early before anybody else, other people, other friends, and chant my rounds and walking. Then I used to, that day when I realized that, you know, I had to lose this friendship, I was crying. Then I realized, I knew this was the only thing left behind for me. This was the only thing hanging on, you know, I was hanging on to in my material life, main thing. So when that went off, it was so actually, you know, painful because you are so attached.
Painful or really fun?
No, it's very, no, because unless you are ready, it's painful, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So suddenly it's pulled off. It's
later
like
you will realize it's good, but.
Yes, exactly. So that time it was painful. I was crying so much. But then later I felt, you know, that was the greatest spoon Krishna would have given me, you know, to pull me into his service.
So inadvertently things happen.
Exactly.
That is the force of God.
Exactly. So the understanding, the whole, what you say, more broader understanding here is that it's he creates situations such that we come closer to him. But all is required is constantly devoted. We do our part. Then things will happen. So then the other related verse is next verse. Tesham evanukampartham aham agnyanadam jamtama nashayami atma bhavasto jnanadipena bhasruta. To show them special mercy, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So how Krishna reciprocates to our devotion is, he removes the darkness in the heart. So that's what here Prabhupada was telling, right? Lord Vishnu, situated in the heart of the yogi, burns up impurities. So similarly, Krishna, the same verse, similar verse is that Lord gives the knowledge from within the heart and removes the ignorance. Because of the ignorance only we have all these attractions and we are held back, right? So Lord removes the impurities and helps us in Krishna consciousness. And then Prabhupada further is saying that meditation on the personal worship of the Lord is much better than meditation on voidism or, you know, impersonal worship. And the aim of all yoga practice is Krishna consciousness. Okay. So any more questions or comments? Online, anybody has any questions or comments? Okay. Can somebody recollect some of the points which touched you or which you are taking home, which we discussed today? Few. It's already getting late. Yeah, I think we are running late. Okay.